Interesting Super Bowl week for the world, for the pivot. We'll get to it, but we were robbed. We've learned that people feel like we cake, so we gotta do something to fix that.
Hold up, limitless, take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust, limitless, take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Welcome to The Pivot. I'm RC. That's Freddie T. This is Chan. Let's talk about some of the good parts of the week. The live show, I thought was really cool.
Very good.
You know, David Montgomery, Alexis Ohanian, who's married to Serena Williams. We had Ryan Mundy stop by, Rashad White, Blake Cashman. I mean, we had a ton of people just sit down with us, and so it gave us an opportunity to have different conversations.
The Aria watched out for us.
Aria looked out for sure. Megan O'Leary. We also had Lou Young, Bob Minnery. And so I thought that that was sort of our first time doing that. And to have it be a success in the way it was, you know, was really grateful for that. We shot some good shows. You know, Antonio Pierce, which we put out on Tuesday, was, I felt, one of the best shows we've done from a football standpoint, from a life standpoint. Obviously, getting to sort of hear his thoughts on everything. But we were there for a game. And once again, the Kansas City Chiefs are the Super Bowl champion, back-to-back champions in a thriller. Just looking back at what Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, that defense were able to do, what's your thought on the way they finished the year?
I hate that people keep saying the first half was boring. It was two top defenses playing top defense against great offenses now, but those defenses are good. And my thing was like, everybody keeps telling me, oh, the first half, no, the first half was not boring. It was ball players and defensive coordinators, and I know we're gonna talk about Steve Wilks, which ran me hot. Spags and Wilks going at it, figuring it out, and doing what they do, and that's why they were in that position.
I mean, the other piece of it is, too, it was two red zone fumbles.
Yep.
San Francisco drives the ball on the first drive, and Christian McCaffrey fumbles in the red zone.
Who doesn't fumble?
Right, and then Isaiah Pacheco, the same thing, when Diamador Lenore forces a fumble. Like, that's just football. It's not boring. Like, I know everybody wants scoring, but it also gets to the end, and you have the game you
want. And that's the thing. It was in the Ravens game when Zay Flowers fumbled on the goal line, and everybody was like, oh, man, he messed up. And you text on the thread, you were like, that's football, because you punched the ball out on the goal line. That's what you try to do. But I hated that the fact that people said the first half was boring, but I loved that game. We had the two best football teams in the entire world playing, and we saw it. For it to go to overtime, we saw what we was what was happening, and that's what I loved about it.
We know best. Football is a game of chess. You know, it's cliche, but that's what it is. It's a battle of field position, back and forth, back and forth. You alluded to the turnovers. That made it a little slow in the scoring category. We had two very well-prepared teams that took 2 weeks of preparation to get there. They were coached well. They were prepared well. Yeah, turnovers, we don't account for those turnovers, but they are part of the game. Like in preparation, we don't, you know, practice fumbling and turning the ball over. We practice making those adjustments when they happen. So when those two teams came back together and they kind of had this boxing match the entire first half, you go, this is a solid game. You know, and for me, it wasn't boring. It just goes to show you how many people don't understand the NFL game. It's always been a heavyweight match. Everybody thinks we gotta just score. No, the beauty of the game is in the trenches. It's what these guys do. When you look at, man, this guy, he's on his shit. He's on his shit. Like, these guys are really competing. That's a beautiful game, and that's what we got. It's the only, what's the second Super Bowl in the history of the Super Bowl to go to overtime? What does that spell? It's a great game for me.
It spells a loss for Kyle Shanahan because he's been in both of them and he's lost.
That's ugly.
Both of them.
But the rarity of it, right? It's one of those fist fights, man. Nobody was backing off, and you know, in the business, man, sometimes you have guys that are served up on a platter as scapegoats.
I don't know scapegoats, cause the the 28-3, Kyle Shanahan, if he would have ran the ball, they'd have won. He started
throwing. I'm not saying Kyle was a scapegoat.
No, no, no.
I'm talking about Wilkes.
Bro, Freddie, I'm not saying scapegoat. I'm saying football. When he was offensive coordinator of the Falcons, he should have ran the ball, ran the clock out. With Kyle Shanahan, and I'll go to the third quarter when they got the interception. The 49ers got the interception. Kyle should have ran the ball with Christian McCaffrey, which y'all know I've praised. Christian McCaffrey is the centerpiece. I love Debo. I love Ayuk. I love all those guys. Sure. Like, they have weapons. But I don't know if Kyle Shanahan, like, they got stuck after that turnover, and they threw the ball 8 times in a row. That's not what you do. Kyle got back to what he does late in the game. He got back to running Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is the centerpiece of that offense.
Yeah, I think for this show's purposes, I mean, ain't no use in analyzing it because it comes down to one thing. One team got Patrick Mahomes.
That's true, but it's also...
They could have won. 49ers could have won.
And I understand that. There's so many things that happen in a football game to provide a moment. Michael Jordan, who some consider, I consider the greatest of all time, the game-winning shots or the historic picture now, the classic picture we see with his hand up in Utah with Byron Russell on the ground, there was so much that happened before that, but in that moment, you gotta have that guy. And Brock Purdy, for all of what it is rushed by Chris Jones late in the game. Juwan Jennings is open. He throws it out of the end zone. You knew, I knew that the Kansas City Chiefs were going to score a touchdown. That the Kansas City Chiefs were inevitable, like Thanos, because of the dude playing quarterback.
Now, Shanahan knew.
We're not going to analyze who should have did what should have happened, this and this. Like, to me, this is about greatness. And there is a lot that has to lead up to that greatness, but you got to show up. And it's not that he just showed up this time. He showed up down double digits the first time. Mm-hmm. He showed up down to Philadelphia last year. Mm-hmm. And eventually, this is a habit. Eventually, this is a pattern. And it's a pattern for him. A lot of times, we talk about the patterns of negativity. And he said that, you know, he can't consider himself the GOAT or even in that conversation because Tom Brady beat him not once, but twice. Tom Brady beat him in the AFC Championship the year he won the MVP. Tom Brady beat him in the 2021 Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But we do have to start to, and I think people already do, you do have to appreciate what we are getting to see. It is Jordan level. It is LeBron level. It is Derek Jeter level, who wasn't as talented as Patrick Mahomes, but he was clutch like Patrick Mahomes. You know, this is the Ovechkins and the Gretzkys and all of these greats that we've had in different sports that just stand out. You know, to me, you even take it to people like Denzel Washington, Daniel Day-Lewis, Leonardo DiCaprio. In a world of extremely talented people and successful humans, he's on a different level than they are. And I think, to me, that's what stood out mostly is that, yeah, man, like, every time, and I'm gonna say for me, every fumble from San Francisco, every missed third down, every tip pass, I kept saying, you can't do that with Pat on the other side. Oh. You know, and so just to see what he's been able to accomplish, you know, it's Brady's early year success with Brady's prime and middle of his career individual accomplishments. And I just think that we haven't seen anything like it. And when you're the San Francisco 49ers, that's what you're playing against.
Me being from Miami is scary for everybody, what I saw, because I'm sitting there with y'all. I don't know how y'all felt. I was sitting there in regular time. I knew Pat was going to get it to overtime, at least. I knew Pat was going to... I thought Pat was going
to... My question to you...
I thought Pat was going to read in regular...
Okay, so my question to you was, when the extra point was blocked, did you have any doubt in your mind what was going to happen? Like that's what I'm talking about because of that dude. Though.
That's the time when you're like, that's where you're like, oh, it's going to... It's nothing that's going to happen right now that he's not going to go ahead and get three. He's going to get three? You're going to give Patrick Mahomes a chance to get three? He gonna go get this three. What was it, 150 or something like that?
Easy.
Bro, that's cake with the weapons he has. You know what I'm saying? And that was the thing that That was, as you talked about it, RC, when you look at it and you know what's going on and you watch the game and you watch the situation of football, and we all know situation of football, I think Pat has put himself in that stratosphere of, oh, you gonna get to do 2 minutes? Watch.
But not only that, the punt return. You know, you can't make mistakes against the Kansas City Chiefs team. That's how they won the entire playoffs. Going back to Buffalo, from penalties, the Ravens game, the 5 15-yard penalties, the fumble right there by Zay, you mentioned it. Late in the game, the muffed or the when the guy kicked the
he
punt
didn't
return.
Kick it. It's just it's
it hit his foot.
He didn't mean to do that. He was just playing.
That's the thing. But that's when you talk about Pat and his greatness. He just sits back like a lion, waiting on it and praying, right? When you come in his zone, he attacks. And he just takes advantage of those opportunities every single time. Every single time.
Yeah, and I think as we have the highs and lows of life, is you come off of that great weekend for the NFL, for football, obviously for the Kansas City Chiefs, and then there's a shooting at the celebration parade on Wednesday. It's one of those reminders that evil doesn't sleep. No matter how much positivity is around, there's going to be something negative. That humans are inherently imperfect, but also, without a doubt, extremely selfish. Mm-hmm. Some don't think about those around them. Now, there hasn't been any report on why it happens. But I could just simply imagine being in the place, the elation that there is at a Super Bowl parade. I've been there. The way that people stack up just to get a glimpse of their favorite player, to hope to pass a beer to Travis Kelce, to hug Isaiah Pacheco, to shake Patrick Mahomes' hand, and then you hear gunshots ring out. There are children there. There are women there. There are elderly people there. And it also gets to the point, it's like, how many times? I think it's 48 shootings in like 46 days. And we're in an era and a generation, one, where nobody wants to wear an ass whipping. And to where we undervalue the ability to make it home. No matter what I've been through, no matter where I've been, no matter what incident I've had, the thing I value is having the ability to make it home. And no matter what I feel about you, I want you to make it home too. And to know that children were harmed, and to know that the young lady has passed from gunshot wounds, I think it almost makes you feel like, damn, we can't ever be too happy, because you're always waiting for the next shoe to drop.
I hate that. I hate that. You just said it. The city of Kansas City was here. And then all of a sudden, like, we're not talking about Patrick Mahomes anymore. We're not talking about Andy Reid's greatness, Hall of Fame. We're not talking about Travis Kelce. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about damn Taylor Swift no more. The shooting has overshadowed that greatness of what it is. And like you just said, RC, eating the ass whooping, like, some, I always say it, like, I'm not undefeated in fights. Because sometimes when you fight, like, yeah, I done got knocked out. I know 3 times that I done been laying on the ground, and I had to tell the man, you got me. You know what I'm saying? You got me. But no matter what created that, and we don't, you just said, we don't know the genesis, we don't know the reasoning behind that shooting, but I hate that it put a black cloud over this. And days after that championship, we're talking about a shooting, but that's the problem. It's a bigger issue, it's a bigger thing to that, but that's the thing that killed me about it. It's like, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, when we talk about this second championship that might be able to be a third in a row, might be able to be a three-peat, we're going to always remember that some dumb motherfucker, I don't know who he is, I don't know why it happened, but some dumb dude out there made this what it is.
The other piece of it is, too, the next parade. Whether it's Kansas City, whether it's San Francisco, whether it's Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Miami, you know, like, I'm from Louisiana, so I've been to a ton of parades, and I don't like to go because I feel like it's a free party with no metal detectors. And you don't know who has what and why they are there. But think about Kansas City. Like, if you watched NFL Network, ESPN, whatever it was, Wednesday evening, it was all about the shooting. It was all about who was in the hospital. It was all about the young lady that passed. It was all about the children receiving treatment. On a day where it's only supposed to be about the excitement of winning a championship and what it does for a city, a fan base, an organization. And now it's all pivoted to a life lost and other people injured over stupidity. And, you know, it's going to get into conversations of politics and gun laws or whatever it is. When, honestly, man, it's a heart issue with humans.
Yeah, I think regardless of motive or circumstance, you know, the threat is gonna always be there. You know, it just magnifies how vulnerable we are as human beings, right? If it can happen in a church, it happened a few days prior to in a church in Texas, Joel Osteen's church. It happens at schools. Of course it'll happen at parades. You know, you're talking about a open space. No protection for the most part. People out there just to have fun, have a good time, and celebrate in those moments. And then, boom, these things happen. Very selfish, you know, but I can guarantee you there was more than one gun in the vicinity during that time. Thankfully, it wasn't more deaths. You know, thankfully, it wasn't more people injured. It's just that in this country, man, that's sort of... That's just sort of what we're dealt. It's unfortunate. How do you stop it? I don't know. If I did know, it would be stopped. But we have to try to create better safety measures during those moments just to try and minimize the threat, right? Because I don't think you can stop it, but I believe we can do certain things, take certain precautions to try and minimize it at the very least.
Now, I've heard it over the last couple of days. You're talking about the NFL, NBA, people, these billion-dollar companies, they do something. And I've heard people criticize, like, the end racism on the back of the helmets, the end racism on the back of the end zones, and, like, people doing it. And WNBA did a lot, NBA did a lot, and all that. Fellas, like, I know, like, if there's a racist dude in Tennessee, or there's a guy in Atlanta, Miami.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Does he really see that there's a... end racism on the back of the end zone or equality thing on the back of the end zone and he's not gonna be racist anymore? No, but at least those people are doing something. That's what I was saying, like they have to get involved. What do they wanna do? You just said it, Fred, the politicians and all that have to get involved. And I hate that we're gonna separate this to two sides, the Second Amendment and all that stuff, but what's the answer? And it's way bigger than me. It's way bigger than us. I'll speak for y'all. It's way bigger than us. But there has to be an answer to why these people keep getting killed at these situations. And that's the crazy thing. So I've heard people criticize the major sporting leagues for not doing more. What the f*** do they want them to do?
People want anyone who is involved or who is thought of to make a lot of money to also be decision makers and world changers. And that's not necessarily what these mega organizations need to be. But we've seen from the NBA when they get pushback from their players, which I think when you think about the way that Adam Silver and the NBA executives react to what their players want, they are probably the most proactive league when it comes to whether it's racism, gun violence, equality, any of those things. I think the NBA is extremely active. After 2020 and, you know, the players getting together by, you know, led by Michael Thomas to make the video, the NFL became more active, whether it's to end racism or whatever, you know, those things have been. from that standpoint, we progressed a long way since 2016 in Colin Kaepernick kneeling. But that doesn't change the man in Tennessee that's been racist his whole life because he was raised by racist parents. Mm-hmm. Because he grew up in a neighborhood where racism was allowed, where he was never around the right black person to punch him in the mouth. And so I think those things we can't stop, but the thing about what happened on Wednesday was that we don't know why it happened, mm-hmm. right? There's different sorts of evil. There's not just the evil of racism. There's the level of evil that doesn't value Fred's life mm-hmm. because we disagree or because there's some sort of beef. There's the sort of evil that doesn't value Channing because Channing's not my family member, because Channing's not my blood. And murder is as old as time. Biblically, murder has been here forever. And now the reasons just change. The ability to stop it changes, but the fact that people can stoop to that level of violence, of evil, has never been different. And I don't believe that any group or organization can stop what humans are made to be, because humans are made to be imperfect. Mm-hmm. And all of our imperfections have levels, right? Like there are things that are mm-hmm. imperfect about me. There are bad decisions that I make, but that decision has never been to take a life. Because I value life, I value my life, I value your lives, I value others' lives, right? And I don't want to ever be in a position to where I'm putting somebody in a spot where they have to decide if they value my life. You know what I mean? Because we can put pressure on people in certain ways where they have to make a decision that it's me or him. Mm-hmm. And if it gets to a spot where it's them or you, even me, if I got in a spot to where it's me or you, like, I gotta take care of me. But, you know, Fred mentioned the Joel Osteen church shooting. You know, we've had so many different mass shootings, whether it be in schools, go back to South Carolina years ago. And so I think that right now we're in a place where it's like, what is safe, mm-hmm. right? I'm asking more so, tell me what's safe than tell me what's not, right? Because it was always, don't go in that neighborhood.
There's no such thing as this is safe versus this isn't safe. Events happen. You know, movie theaters. You know, all you can go anywhere and something just can break out. Sometimes when I don't have my situation on me, at the grocery store maybe, or different moments, I just kind of rush out the house. I'm in the store, I'm looking around like, damn, this could be one of those moments. An asshole can be here with a gun. You know, and I don't have anything to defend or protect myself or anyone else that's in here. Gas station, just chilling at the pump. People can pull up on you, or any random event can happen. So in terms of safety, it's so randomized. I think you just pray up when you wake up and step out on faith, and that's as cliche as it can come, and then pray that you return home, you know, later in the afternoon. Other than that, there's no such thing as like really being safe.
Can we solve it though? Red, blue, left, right, all that stuff. Nope. That's what I'm saying. That's what we gotta get together.
Capitalism entered the conversation and in politics, you're talking about the politicians and rationalization, bro, they value maintaining and keeping their jobs more than they do problem solving. They don't display risk-taking behavior. Like, these people are selfish. And when the lobbyists enter the conversation as well, everybody's That shit does not exist. You might have one in a barrel that will fight for the people. Other than that, bro, these people worried about maintaining their job and their status. Giving a fuck about you, your kids, etc. You gotta do that. You gotta set yourself up. I don't believe in, like, politics is what it is, politics.
Yeah, and also, too, you know, we're now in a stage where, like, politicians can be cool, and politicians can be famous, and politicians can be stars, right? Being a politician is almost like having a podcast. It's like having a TV show. You get to get these certain things that elevate you, but none of that is gonna stop people from doing bad things. You know, like sometimes people rob. Yeah. You know, like people take stuff. You know, like you could just be having a great day at the hotel, right? In a meeting.
Minding your business.
Minding your own business. You could have been up at 3 a.m. shooting shows. You could wake back up at 7, shoot another show, be so happy about it, because you got your cameras, you got your computers, you got your cards that go in the cameras, you downloaded everything, and you can realize that your security is cake.
Thieves out there.
There is. Steelers, and I ain't talking about Pittsburgh. Bro.
There's some thieves
bro,
out there.
Bro, when I walked out of the meeting with Nike, right? So, Alicia Zubikowski, we talk about her all the time, our producer, she is a very emotional human. Some might call her dramatic. Not me, but some. Some may say that things affect her in a very distinct way.
Passionate.
Right, so here I am. I walk out of the meeting just for a second. I wanted to go over and get me a ginger beer. Right? She looks at me, and I can see it on her face, right? She ghost white. And she goes, you will not believe what happened. And I was like, what happened? She goes, it's the worst thing ever. So one, like I'm from New Orleans, somebody got shot. That's my first thing.
Somebody done died.
Damn.
Jesus.
They done took KK. Right? that my first thought. You know, shoot, KK 5'3", 73 pounds.
73.
Right, I was like, damn, they done got away with KK. So then she hits me with, they stole all our stuff. And I was like,
huh?
Whoa, who hurt? Right, because ain't no way they stole our
steal
stuff.
It all.
And ain't nobody injured. Like, somebody had to get, poof, right? So then.
Who got hit in the head?
Right, so then we send the goons after him. We send Mike. He 5'6".
Olivia.
We said, oh, she 96-pound woman. And they go on a wild goose chase trying to find our stuff because we got air tags in it. And then when all else failed, we were down to our wits' end. We call in the closer. We said, KK. hey, Matt said, KK hopped out of the car. Following the air tag, it said, KK from Nigeria. KK said, Matt, grab stones. It's on site. What the hell you gonna do with a stone, KK?
Just not that.
Hey, you know how you see it be the foreign countries and they be throwing the stones at the tank? Yeah. Was KK gonna throw rocks at the tank?
KK about to throw rocks at her.
Chad, we pie, bro. We gotta
figure it out. Yeah, yeah. Our pair of security was pie. We done tightened up now, so they gonna have to get right now, because, you know, what? You don't know what you don't know. We didn't know they was coming after us. But yeah, but they hit us. They got us. And it was wild out in Vegas. They got us. And with everything that went on, you learn lessons from what happens. You always reactionary. So that's one thing. You gotta be reactionary. So now we're reactionary. I'm the biggest thing on the show. I should have went after them, not KK. I should have went after him. I'm the tallest thing that we always have. But now we done bounced back and we gotta figure that thing out.
Nah, we was just talking about being safe, never safe. They always say don't sleep in Vegas. We were sleeping.
Dude is casing the joint, right? So he's casing the joint. It's, you know, we had five great detectives that ended up working overtime, finishing late at that night, waking up in the morning, communicating with Alicia, communicating with the hotel. And they eventually found it, but it was a crime of opportunity. It's a guy that understands what's going on that week. He sees this live show, right? So he follows Mike, and he say, okay. So he tries to come in, like, hey, is this the media room? And Mike's like, nah, this not the media room. But his antennas don't really go up, like, okay, something could happen. So then dude slips into the door, gets on the elevator, goes up the elevator, and he's waiting for Mike to go out. So now Mike goes out, he's helping Olivia, because even though she's ended up being our security, she's not a big lady, right? And so Mike goes out to help Olivia, and so now this dude slips out. And it's like you're following the air tags. They're in all of these different places. The detectives are popping up at places. Obviously, KK popping up, trying to find it. And so it's one of those things where dude understood it was Super Bowl week. Yep. He knew people would be doing certain things and there would be opportunities to come up. But the only thing that really helped us was, too, none of the pawn shops could really take anything at that time because they understand people gonna be thieving.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, like, those sorts of things could happen.
We're trying to make light of the situation, man, but we were really kind of bad off. When you came into the meeting with Nike, I was like, damn, what's going on? So trying to make light of it, but also understanding that it was a serious matter. You know, so many things had to take place in order for us to get to the point where we eventually got to get our stuff back. But, you know, fast forward, the day after the Nike meeting, after they took it, we got out there to do the stuff for Nike, being all around the kids. We were so consumed in that, in our work, that we didn't even have a whole lot of time to think about what was really going on. You know, I just want to say a special thanks to everybody involved that helped us get to the point where we can get, you know, the cameras back, our footage back. And thankfully, at the very end of it all, no one was hurt, man. But lesson learned, you know, we'll continue to make sure we do everything that we can to circumvent things like that for happening in the future, man. But again, special shout out to everybody that was involved.
LVPD, I think that's what it is, and all the detectives that were on it, like, it was, we laughing about it, but it was a big deal, and they really put work in 24 hours a day. What was it, for 2-3 days they was working on this thing, air tags, chasing people around and all that. And like, we really had a great crew of people that were trying to figure it out, and they ended up figuring it out. So that's what it is. Are those law enforcement officers? Man, without them, we could not have our film back right now for the great shows we're gonna put out.
You leave your house thinking, you know, good things are gonna happen. Like, we were working hard, working our ass. You, RC, you're going from ESPN back to the ARIA, ESPN back. Like, everybody was in motion, handling business and working hard, and that's the crew. And sometimes you can let your guard down. You know, not expecting those things to happen. You leave your house, you don't expect those things to happen. Like the people that went to the parade just to celebrate, you know, life. And it's just unfortunate, man, that you have a lot of evil in the world, man. But at the end of the day, we got our stuff back. We got some beautiful, amazing shows, you know, to give y'all. So stick around for that, man. And we're gonna always pivot. We're gonna figure it out.
Yeah, I think, like, just to be honest, man, like, and having fun with it, and having fun with the fact that, you know, it's Mike and Olivia and it's KK, it doesn't take away that I respect what went into getting our stuff back, right? Like, was I hurt that stuff was stolen, and also that, you know, we had shows that we wanted to put out that were filmed and footage and all of those things? Absolutely. But I'm also alive.
Yes.
All of our people were alive and unharmed. For me, it's so much bigger than just...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Getting stuff back. I am extremely grateful for all of those detectives that worked overtime. You know, I spoke about it earlier. They finished up 5:30 that morning. There were other extremely heinous acts that were taking place in Las Vegas, which you expect is something like that, that they were dealing with, and they took the time to help us. We subpoenaed footage from the ARIA. They examined that footage. They got a clear picture of the guy. They obviously continued to follow the air tags. So I do want to give them a shout out. It was Sergeant Garcia, Detective Hendricks, Detective Kolonowski, Detective Roberts, but most of all, Jasmine Avalos, who really spearheaded and ran the entire investigation. And something that she said really stuck out with me was that everything I do or every case I take, I treat it as if somebody did something to me. And I think for us being in this world where the relations between law enforcement and our community especially isn't always great, or the communication between those two entities isn't always great, to hear somebody in that position say, I treat everything like it happened to me. I don't just think about our footage. I think on a lower level, she was trying to say, this is going to be taken serious by me. I'm not going to just poo-poo it because it's cameras and computers and footage, right? I'm going to look at it. But I think on a higher level, I think about the other things they were dealing with as well around our case, right? Rapes and people trying to get on planes and leave, making sure they don't let those things happen, attempted murders. And there's like, this woman was busy handling our case and also handling all of these other things that were going around, also the detectives that were with her. So I believe that they should be shouted out, they should be highlighted, because even though there's parts of it that I do think are funny, because we know the people involved, it was obviously an extremely serious situation.
Come on, grab something now. I don't never look in the camera. Come on, grab something now.
You know what, though? You know what it does, though? It makes you recognize that, like, you can't just trust. Mm-hmm. You can't decide to not be proactive, because you think you just move around, and we've moved around in like our spaces of shooting so easily that now in something like that, in shooting at the Aria, in being very visible that we're promoting it, every iPad you touched in the room, our faces are popping up. There's this big billboard of us in the lobby. It's like, no, now you're a target.
Yep.
Now people know you're here. It's not like shooting in this building where we're shooting and we're never coming back.
Yeah.
Like, people know that you're around in that case, and so you do have to be extremely vigilant. I hate to use that word, vigilant, and protecting your stuff. Like, the other event that happened this weekend is my contract's up with ESPN.
Uh-oh.
And inside the NFL is done until next year. So right now, guys, this is my only job.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a free agent.
You know, I saw your tweet, and obviously I put my two cents in it on a retweet, and I spoke from the heart.
I appreciate it.
You know, yep. I understand, you know, how you work at this craft, how you're up, you're taking your notes. We can be f***ing off, you know, and you're over there doing what you do, man. And it was easy for me to send that tweet out, bro. You deserve, obviously, what you believe you deserve.
Yeah.
But your value is what, obviously, is what you take, man. I think, or I hope they do right by you.
Yeah.
But I don't know if is it a good or bad thing. I guess it's where I started, because you work so much. You need some downtime.
Yeah, I do like the downtime a little bit, like being able to chill. You guys have been through contract negotiations, though. Contract negotiations are weird, right? Contract negotiations with your own team are normally the hardest, mm-hmm. because they see you a certain way. Like, they see you how you got in, right? They always saw me as sort of an undrafted free agent. So every contract, I'm just like, hey, look at the film, right? And so, like, now I'm also like, hey, look at the film. And then it's that other thing, and, you know, Fred said it before, we've heard it on the show, comparison is the thief of joy. And it may be, but also comparison is how we set our value.
Mm-hmm.
It is that, hey, nobody else here has what's on my trophy case. They don't. Like, that's a fact. Right? Nobody here, no matter what show he's on, is the thing that ESPN Social is making sure they push out, no matter who I'm on the show with. And I respect everybody I work with. And so, like, for me, it has been a reminder, you know, just in getting down to the week and making that post. And I wanted to, you know, thank some of the executives who have allowed me to be there, whether I'm gonna be there going forward or not. You know, like, I understand they have to make those decisions. And one of them was basically just like, either way, you'll be good. You know, it wasn't a, man, we hope you're here. You know, we appreciate all you've done. Just like, you'll be good, which I will, right? But it let me know that it's different for different people. Like, I'm not gonna be able to sit on my show and call out an executive by name and say that this executive is effing over me, and then be in a picture with another executive the next week because he's showing solidarity with me. I know I don't get that. I know I don't get to behave in any way other than a way that represents us, the way that we're supposed to be represented and the way that we want to be seen, the way that we want to be represented, represent the network in a way that they want to be seen, in a way that they want to be perceived, and represent myself in the way that I want to. I know I can't step out of that, because if I step out of that, I will not have people pushing for me. I will not have people standing on the table for me, right? Like, I gotta do everything. And that was what my post was about. It was like, I've done everything, right? And I'm very honest with them in talking, because I don't have an agent, no, right? You know, David Mulligetta is doing the financials of my contract, because he's my friend. Like, I wanted somebody I could trust. Like, I'm not built like these people in this business, right? I'm built on, like, I want to be honest. I want to say, I've done this is what I deserve. And so, like, I've just learned, man, that, like, you have to give yourself an opportunity to hear everything, feel everything before you make your choice. And it's funny, because y'all have been around me. The one thing my immediate boss said was this: please don't take a deal that you don't want, because I know that'd be the worst thing for us. And both of y'all have been around me. Y'all know that too.
Yeah. You're going to give people a hard time. It's respect. It's respect what you're doing. I remember back in the day, Lamar Jackson just did it. Lamar got criticized for it, so I don't know how the criticism comes from that side of the media. Yeah. When I was playing, Dante Culpepper represented himself. And I would say it's funny talking about your worth. When my contract was up, my first deal with the Dolphins, Brian Urlacher just got paid. And I told my agent at the time, because I'm not like you, RC, I can't go agentless. I told my agent, take Brian Urlacher's contract, white out his name, put my name on it. And the Dolphins were like, you're not Brian Urlacher. I said, bitch, we got to start somewhere. So to that point, though, man, you are extremely talented. What you've done over the last 3 years, I saw the post. I see what you say. You're 100% correct. What you've done, bro, and what you are to this industry, real talk. Not to get emotional, but real talk, bro. You're special.
Appreciate it,
you're the future.
Man.
Do whatever you got to do. And all I can do is, you need me to jump on somebody, I jump on.
Nah, we don't need that. What we need to do, though, we saw Gail at Fanatics, man. We gotta hook Gail up with somebody.
I don't got nobody worth a damn.
Me neither. Like, that's
You can't throw Gail no crumbs.
See, that's what I told her, was like, Gail, I don't want to be responsible for how people I know gonna act. But I say that to say, the red carpet was cool, man. What would be, because I know what my highlight is, what would be your highlight of the Fanatics party and being able to be on the blue carpet, actually?
My answer's easy. We standing there next to Gary Vee, a billionaire. Michael Rubin walks past.
Another billionaire.
Two billionaires, and I just saw how billionaires interact. They say their first name and their last name, but they don't smile at each other. Y'all, bro, I swear, I told that story 10, 15 times since then. Ruben walked, he said, Gary Vee, with a straight face. And Gary Vee looked back and said, Michael Rubin.
And got back to talking.
And they just both walked past each other. I think we need to implement that. When we see each other out.
Well, you got
to
say first and last name, though. We got to say Channing Crowder.
Channing Crowder.
We're gonna start practicing.
Ryan Clark. Hey. Bro, that's billion. I saw how billionaires interact. That was the highlight of my weekend, other than hanging out with Kevin from The Office. His name is Brian Baumgartner. That's my ace.
We were playing. He doesn't know you.
Huh?
He doesn't know you.
Why are you gonna do that to me? How are you gonna do that?
He was just hanging out with a light-skinned guy that puts a lot of money on the level.
He never said my name.
Because he doesn't know you.
You feel bad?
Man, y'all.
It's easy for me, and it didn't have so much to do with the Fanatics, the blue carpet. You know, I enjoy all of those moments. Seeing Shaq, talking to Jay Rose, Gary Vee, you know, a lot of those guys. Mine was off the carpet when we were leaving, running into my former teammate, the GOAT, TB12. Hadn't seen him in person in years, like maybe since I left.
He was so excited to see you too, bro.
Yeah, right? And, now, I still kind of fumbled because my teammates asking me.
Nope, he said, Ryan, Freddie, he called me fella.
I thought he called you Bud.
Bud, never mind, I'm sorry, yeah. He said, Freddie T. How do you know, RC? Hey, fella. hey, buddy.
He probably remembers some dirty shit you tried to do back in the day.
He called me Bud, Freddie.
Nah, but, you know, I think the that was a highlight. But then after we got in the car and we chopped it up, anyone said, Freddie, did you get Tom's number? Did you get his info to invite him on the show? I didn't. I mean, I didn't want to invite the man on the show after not seeing him in person.
Why not? I invite people I don't know.
A decade.
I invite people I don't know, Fred.
Hey, TB12, man, got to do me a solid, brother. I'm asking you, I'm inviting you on the show right now. I'll hit your DM again, and hopefully my team can forgive me for not asking
you. Dropped the bag.
I did drop the bag.
You dropped the bag.
But that was one of my highlights.
So my highlight was we see Jelly Roll walking outside of the carpet, and I open up I take the rope off, I go to talk to him, and you know, I'm gonna shoot my shot. I'm like the ugly dude in the club. They can't say nothing but no. And so when he said, man, I was gonna hit y'all, I would love to come on y'all show.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. His speech at the Country Music Awards was legendary. I think he has a story to tell, and I believe that we'd be a great platform to tell it. And lastly, I'm walking from the suite to go do TV after the game, and I bumped into Glorilla. And so it was her and her pops. Her pops was a Steeler fan or whatever. So we take a picture, and Freddie T, on that, I also fumbled. But I have made it right, and she has agreed to come on the show. So we're gonna have her soon. And the last thing too, Super Bowl weekend breaks up relationships that should last forever. Sean Evans, the host of Hot Ones, dumped his porn star girlfriend on Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day. You can't, because he said he didn't like the attention. I'm gonna be honest, Chan. Her name's Melissa Stratton. She's never been to any of, you know her? She's never been to any of my porn searches.
You ain't never hit Melissa?
No, I don't know her.
Shit. With it.
Nah, I don't.
With it, RC.
Can that really exist, though? Porn star girlfriend?
Yes. It's a job.
Talent. Y'all know talent when you see it. And I know talent when I see it.
And the other thing is, too, it's like an open audition to what she could do. Like, you don't even have to find out, Freddie T. It's like film, right? Think about, like, when free agency come, what do? They go watch your film. Sean sat back, he cut on the film, and he said, I can win with that.
That's why.
But then, I also don't know, like, would the paparazzi really be around her or him? Or is that like a celebrity couple?
I'm more of a fan of her. I don't know what he does. What, he eat chicken wings?
He does hot ones, yeah. They eat the hot wings and
what
interviews.
She does is way more important than eating chicken wings. I eat chicken wings my whole life. Have you seen what she does? Bro, let me show you my phone.
I don't want to see it.
Bro, I got it on the history right now.
I'm good, Chan. Not on the show.
I might have needed me a towel last night.
Well, guys, that is it.
Thank you.
We will see y'all next Tuesday.
Let's get out of that conversation. This is a different type of freaky.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On a mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On this vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up.